We've been continuing a series that's longer in three parts and continuing in the section on justice. This is the fourth in that part. And we've been walking through and exploring what the scriptures teach us about justice. And just as we get into it again, because I know not everyone is here every week, or perhaps you just need a reminder like I do each time, I wanted to begin by going through a bit of a summary of where we've gone, how things build together. So let's start there. The first week, we talked about how God is just, how God is the one who creates the world, and because he creates it according to his justice, his goodness, his truth, that actually everything he does is just, and he defines what justice is. We also saw in week two that doing justice is real worship. The way we phrased it that week was that that God's justice demands our reverence. But that's a way of saying, more simply, doing justice is real worship. And we looked at some scriptures that week where God was saying, stop singing. Stop bringing sacrifices. I don't want it if you're not going to be merciful to each other. I want to see righteousness flow. The way that you treat each other has to be right long before I want your worship and your songs. So real worship is done by doing justice. We saw all of this come together most fully in the life of Jesus, which was a life of justice. Not only does he show us what a just life looks like, but because of his death, his resurrection, as a perfect human being sacrificed on our behalf, dealing with our unjust actions, he makes it possible for us to live a life that is just. That's a wonderful thing. And now today, as we come in today's topic, it's really on the theme of that followers of Jesus pursue justice. He makes that life possible for us, and that's what we need to do. We need to pursue justice, but not simply for ourselves, but for others. I was thinking this week as we come into this topic, especially about the life of Sandy Hollinger, which we celebrated on Friday. Sandy was a man who, by his own admission, was very much an imperfect man. He had his challenges, his struggles, and all of that. But Sandy had a heart for those who were treated unjustly. Sandy had compassion for those who were in need. He was involved in so many different aspects. Of course, we know him perhaps most readily through the soup kitchen, most directly, but some of you have seen his life working itself out in all kinds of corners of the community, taking care of people, looking out for those who are in need. I saw him week after week at the English Conversation Group, making sure that those who were on the margins because of language had an opportunity to develop English skills, so that they wouldn't be excluded from our world, wouldn't be excluded from job opportunities and things that would make their family life here in Canada a significantly better one. I think of Sandy Hollinger. I think a number of years ago about Tavy Ingersoll. Tavy, you may know, is the wife of Dana Ingersoll, who's primarily in Cornwall. About 8 years ago, one week, she heard on the radio, CBC Radio, about those English speakers, or people who were trying to learn the English language, not having enough people to help them practice. And the conversations she began to have with people in the church resulted ultimately in trying to do different ministry with newcomers to Canada, and ultimately to me coming in a capacity to do that kind of work. That was 7.5 years ago that I came, but it was birthed out of her listening to something on the CBC. She was someone who loves the Lord, follows Jesus, and was beginning to pursue justice for those who are on the margins of society. I think about two women who are connected to Cornerstone, who've now begun the work in ministry of Blooming House. You've been hearing about the significant things they've been doing. There hasn't been a women's shelter in Charlottetown for years. And they heard about that again on the CBC News. You got to be careful. You can't listen to CBC, apparently. But they heard the stories and began to dig and scratch and look under the rocks and find out what the real story was, and began meeting with women and heard a story about a woman who had no place to stay, and so she was sleeping in a culvert. And the only thing that we were able to offer her as a society when she pursued help through our sort of normal channels was she was offered a sleeping bag for that culvert. And they said, that's not acceptable. And the result of that has been the work of Blooming House today, that's continuing to grow, still continuing to meet a need, and has many more needs to address still. We've talked about many different things here amongst us, and I've seen how many of you have responded when we have taken an initiative to deal with poverty or injustice in some other part of the world, or even here in our neighborhood. Back in the spring of last year, when we identified that there was a real need at the school, Glenn Stewart, for families that were not having enough food for children, we put out the call here to this congregation and said, can we help? And we provided 40 different grocery orders over the space of 10 weeks, caring for families that were struggling and needing help. And it's amazing how reaching out in those simple ways can make a big difference in the life of a child, big difference in the life of a classroom too, as teachers told us. We have tried to be a people here at Cornerstone where justice is sought. Because we love Jesus, because we've seen him seek justice and pursue justice for us, that we, in turn, seek justice for others. This is an ongoing struggle for us. It's a constant battle, but it is something that we cannot ignore. Justice, I heard a wonderful teacher on this subject a couple of weeks ago. On a Wednesday, I took a whole conference day, just live stream, to listen to Joyce Reese talk about justice. And one of the most profound things she said that day for me was that justice is not simply icing on the cake for a Christian. It's not something extra added. Justice is baked in. And as we talked about that first week, we said, because God is just, he has created the world to be a place of justice. And who he is just. It's not icing on the cake. It's who he is. And it's who we are when we're made in his image. It's who we're called to be when we live a life like the life of Jesus. We're called to be just people. We've looked at a number of scriptures. Let me just highlight a couple of them for you here that just say this so clearly. Isaiah 1:17 says, learn to do good, seek justice, help the oppressed, defend the cause of orphans, fight for the rights of widows. Already, just in a couple sentences, that's quite a list, isn't it? Proverbs 31:8-9 says, speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. Ensure justice for those being crushed. Yes, speak up for the poor and helpless and see that they get justice. Throughout the ages, Christians have responded to these words of scriptures, responded to the call of the Spirit by doing what justice they could. And I've made just a very short list of some of the ways Christians have responded to issues of justice. You see, and you need to remember as we look at this list, that justice means right relationships between every aspect of creation. That means that things between you and me, people, are right. That things between people and creation, the world that God has created, are right. That things between us and God are right. And that the systems, even, that human beings created are right and just and fair. Some of you have seen the story of Amazing Grace, William Wilberforce, the story of slavery many years ago, and how this was seen as an unjust thing. And Christians, you know, what was amazing is that many Christians argued that slavery was right and good from the scriptures. But ultimately, that just can't be upheld. And so he argued, no, slavery is unjust and it's wrong to treat people without dignity. They are all created in the image of God. So there was this massive push amongst Christians, especially, towards eliminating slavery. Sex trafficking is, especially in our current day, has become a real issue, and it's impossible to ignore. It's an issue that in fact is addressed in a lot of the indigenous people's communities, where there's a lot of other forms of injustice as well, where people have been treated systematically poorly. Things have been set up in such a way in really that keep indigenous peoples down, that make it impossible for them to get a fighting chance. There are issues of poverty all over, not just here in our midst, but all around the world. There are issues of poverty that Christians have tried to address. Compassion is a ministry that says right on their byline, you know, releasing children from poverty. Food security. The opportunity for people to have food sustainably, to be able to produce it for themselves, not simply to rely on others as a handout. And so to have food security, water rights. There are countries that are selling the rights to all their water to multinational corporations. And then their people can't grow food, can't even find water to drink. That's an issue of injustice that Christians are addressing around the world. There's styrofoam. People have seen that styrofoam causes all kinds of damage, long-lasting effects to the world. And so Christians have said, you know what? For our part, we're not going to use styrofoam cups when we drink our coffee. We're going to use paper cups instead. There's all kinds of these aspects that we begin to reflect on. We begin to realize something is not right in the world. There's something that needs to be done. We can do it in small ways and big ways. Women's education, the book that we mentioned for CBM, it starts today. It tells the story of a young girl in Rwanda whose life and family is being changed by the opportunity to have education. Because if you don't know how to read and write, if you don't know how to do math, how do you ever get ahead? Affordable housing, that's a big issue here in Charlottetown even today. It's one of the reasons why there is homelessness. Racial discrimination, it's everywhere. I've been hearing stories working with newcomers about all kinds of aspects of racial discrimination. How sometimes people who are new to Canada will use a Canadian name just so that they can get an interview. You know, my name is Joe Rohamed. That's not what my birth name is, but I've got to get in the door. I've spoken with people who are engineers, doctors, lawyers, massive amounts of training with English as their first language from another Commonwealth country who can't get a job serving French fries in Canada. These are injustices because of the color of someone's skin, because they're CFAs, they come from away. I've even spoken to some of you who look like the dominant culture in PEI, but because you came from another province, another city, have felt excluded. This happens all around us in our world. And Christians try to address these things. Ethically sourced coffee. I remember first hearing about this. Have you ever heard of Just Us Coffee down in the valley of Nova Scotia? Pursuing ethically sourced. That means that the people who are harvesting the beans aren't getting ripped off. That they're getting a fair wage for the beans that they're selling us. And you know what? I don't mind paying a few cents more if it means they actually get to eat that day for their hard work. Better coffee, too. Child labor. We've heard about sweatshops in other parts of the world, other countries, where children are exploited and being used for their cheap labor. And we've heard these stories, and what do we do about it? Do we turn a blind eye? Do we deal with it? And there's disposable fast fashion, where we'll just take clothes, wear them a couple times, and then just throw them out. It's just perfectly good clothes, but we throw them away. This is a short list. And that's the trouble, isn't it? We begin to hear all these things that if we were really honest, if we really evaluated our lives, our activities, the way that we live and how it impacts other people, everything down to coffee and coffee cups. If we truly examined all of those things and thought, is someone being taken advantage of so that I can have this? We would quickly start to see our house of cards crumble. And we can be so overwhelmed by all the injustice of the world. And we begin to say, well, how do I even deal with all of this? So today what I want us to do is I want us to consider some things that we don't do, as well as some things that we do as we pursue Jesus, as we pursue a life of justice. So let's look at the first point here. Justice is not found in looking away. When we see the long list, when we see the overwhelming number of things, it's not found by looking away and saying, it's just too much, I'm overwhelmed. Because that doesn't get us any further ahead, does it? Now, look at a couple verses here. James 2:15-16 says, suppose you see a brother or sister who has no food or clothing, and you say, goodbye, have a good day, stay warm, eat well. But then you don't give that person any food or clothing. What good does that do? It's one thing to wish someone well. It's another thing to take care of their needs and to help them. I think most of us understand that. 1 John 3:17 says, if someone has enough money to live well and sees a brother or sister in need but shows no compassion, this is more convicting. How can God's love be in that person? If we see something but we do nothing, do we really love God? Do we really have the love of God in us? And the trouble for many of us today is that we see so many things that it becomes impossible for us to do something about them all. I'm going to address that in just a moment, but we need to acknowledge that in our world where the news and social media and the stories of one part of the corner of the globe can reach us here, it can be overwhelming and we can become fatigued about what to do, but we can't simply do nothing. One of the things I've found is, as we've tried to tackle different things here in this congregation, is that sometimes I hear from you, like, people will respond and say, but I can't do all of that. And I want to say, you don't have to. Not everything is for everyone. Not every opportunity that we announce in church is necessarily going to be for everyone in the church. There are some times where we try to rally together and do it all, but we need to be discerning about what we're able to do, what we can do. I'll speak more about that in a moment, but I want to take you to this verse first. Proverbs 24, 11 and 12 says, "Rescue those who are unjustly sentenced to die. Save them as they stagger to their death. Don't excuse yourself." When I read these words, I was absolutely struck. This is like, I've never heard this in the Bible before. I've read it many times. How have I ever missed this? It's so direct. Don't excuse yourself by saying, look, we didn't know. For God understands all hearts and he sees you. He who guards your soul knows you knew. Listen to that. He who guards your soul knows you knew. He will repay all people as their actions deserve. We can become so overwhelmed by all the needs that we see, all the possibilities for dealing with injustice that there are. But the answer can't be to do nothing. There has to be some response. If God is really real in our lives, if Jesus has actually made a difference, we cannot simply look away. So what do we do? And I want to suggest that this is the antidote. The justice is found in attending to what we know and can do. When we know something, we consider if there's something we can do. Not every situation we hear about is something that we can do something about. Some of it is outside of our ability, either for time constraints, either for the lack of resources or lack of opportunity. But when we know about something, when we see a brother or sister who's in need, we consider, what can I do? Is there something I can do? Is there something I'm able to do? You know, I said earlier in the service, this was a week where I had more places to be than I could be. And I had to look at my limitations and say, someone has to be disappointed. Something has to give. And that's a horrible feeling when you're in that spot, where you know you simply can't do it all and you want to be because you love people, you care about people, and all of that. But we have to honestly evaluate, what can I do? What is in my hand? What do I know? What am I able to do? And this is a moment for us to be discerning by the Spirit. Now, I want to put this more pointedly with this next bit here. Let's go on to the next. And I want you to ask yourself, this may help you how to focus yourself, by asking, where have you experienced injustice? Where is it that you in your life know the needs of that situation intimately because you've experienced it or you've seen it firsthand? One of the greatest areas of passion that God often gives us is the areas where we have been hurt. And the greatest ways of our healing is then to help and comfort others in those situations. And so as you consider all these aspects of justice, and they are bound because they constitute the whole world, as we consider, where am I to invest my energy? Of the things that I know about, what is it that God would call me to do? Where would my hands and feet, where would he take them? Where would he send me? Perhaps the place to start is by saying, where is it that I've experienced injustice firsthand? Because that's an area I know. That's an area where I know the needs and I can step in a meaningful way. That's an area that I feel passionate about, that I want to help. I want to be there for someone in the way that someone else was for me or that I wish someone was for me when I was in that situation. Some of you have experienced poverty and you know what it's like to go without. You know, one of the most difficult times in my life was when I went to Vancouver to go to school to train to be a pastor. And yes, I had a place to stay, but I remember at one point thinking I couldn't find a dollar if I wanted one. I didn't have the money in my bank account. I didn't have it in the change in my car. There was no change left. And I thought, how in the world do other people do this? And then I also know there have been times in my life, I remember thinking about the injustice of this moment, where I had just a little bit of money in my bank account, and the bank called me and said, because you've been keeping a consistent balance, we'd like to waive your banking fee. And I thought, well, where were you when I lived in Vancouver? When I couldn't afford to pay the banking fee. And I thought to myself, I'm happy to get this, but how just is it that in our world, the people who have get things for free, and the people who are in need have to pay? And so I've always had a heart for those people who are in those kinds of difficult situations. Some of you who have gone through difficult experiences in your families, in your homes, you know what abuse is like, and you have a heart for people who have been abused or who are going through it. Some of you who have been through a divorce, like I have a heart for people who've been through a divorce because you understand it. You've seen it. You know the needs. You know the secret pain. Some of you who have experienced what it's like to be a foreigner in a foreign country, perhaps even here, know what it's like. And you look out for those people who are on the margins now. We can't all do everything. Not everything is for everyone, but that doesn't mean that we can't do nothing. Did I say that right? We need to consider, what is God asking me to do? I can't do it all, but I can do something. And we might begin to find that focus by asking, where have I experienced that injustice? Where is it that I can come and in one small way make things right? We tried to do that as a church when we saw the Syrian refugee crisis. We said, well, there's 1.5 million refugees in Lebanon right now alone. There's millions elsewhere. But we said, there's 1.5 million Syrian refugees in Lebanon. We can't help them all, but let's do for one family what we wish we could do for every family. And we brought a family here. There are countless ways that we, together as a church, as individuals, when we look at the world around us, we can respond in a way that is like Jesus. Let's continue on here. Justice is not found in being legalistic with a new law. One of the things I've found often, especially with people who are passionate about these different areas of justice, is that they are so passionate that they sometimes offend the people around them, and people don't want to hear about it anymore. Because they begin to say, you're using styrofoam cups? Those are evil and awful. You shouldn't be doing that. You're a horrible person because, and on it goes. Now listen, we are all, as Christians, we're going to be pursuing God, we're going to be finding different areas of conviction, but we can't create new laws and expect every other Christian to abide by them. What we talked about over a month ago now in a previous series was how the law interacts with us in faith. The law always shows us that we're incapable. We can't meet all the laws. We can't be in all the places at once that we want to be. So the answer isn't by making a new law about how to be just. You know, what have we heard over the past few weeks? What did Jesus say to those law keepers? He said, well, you're keeping all the laws and that's great, but your heart isn't right. So even if we added another law, it wouldn't be the answer. It wouldn't be the solution to injustice. No. What is the answer? Let's go on. Justice is found in the Spirit. We heard that the life of a Christian isn't the life of law, it's the life of Spirit, where we discern what it is that God is saying to us. Now, listen, this is where it gets difficult, because discerning means that one group of Christians or one Christian might come to a different decision than another about what it means to be faithful in a particular time and place. And that doesn't necessarily mean one is right or wrong. But God will convict you as you try to follow his leading by the Spirit. He'll convict you of different things, and he'll instruct you, and he'll teach you and convince you that you have to act in a certain way. And when he does that, you need to do what he's called you to do. But it will be a constant process, a difficult one, of discerning by the Spirit. This is the thing. People love clarity. You'd all love me to give you a new law just to tell you what to do. But you'd hate it after, because it would crush you. And I could give you a law, I could point to something and say, this is what Christians must always do, but that's never how the way of God works. Instead, God calls us and draws us by his Spirit to convictions, how we lead, how we need to discern that Spirit together through reading Scripture, through discussion, through prayer. And in the midst of that, we find the way of justice. Now, let's look here at the next verse. This is the life of Jesus, as expressed actually as a prophecy in Isaiah. And it's said here that Jesus fulfilled this prophecy in Isaiah. Listen to this, Matthew 12, 18 to 21. Look at my servant. This is God speaking of his son. Look at my servant who I have chosen. He is my beloved who pleases me. I will put my spirit upon him, and he will proclaim justice to the nations. When we want to be like Jesus, it means that we live a life by his Spirit so that we can proclaim justice. Why would it be different for us than it would be for Jesus? If Jesus needed the Spirit of God to be able to proclaim justice to the nations, why would we be able to do it on our own strength? We can't. It's foolishness. We can never live up to the law. We can never do any of that apart from God's work in our lives. And so this is always a work of the Spirit. Let's go on to the next. Justice is not found in being judgmental of others. I already began to allude to this a moment ago. When we have some sense of conviction about what justice means for us, discerning by the Spirit, we need to be careful not to then judge those around us who aren't convinced of the same things. I was speaking to someone this week, and they were saying, you know, I'm careful to do this, and I'm careful to do that, and they have a long list of their behaviors in pursuing justice, but then they said, but I'm also aware that my cell phone has a metal in it that's, you know, mined in kind of a country where there's some things going on that are a little sketchy. Does that mean I don't use a cell phone? For some people, they've been convinced by the Spirit that they don't want to have any part of that. Others have said, there's no way I can live without that in this world. Sometimes we have to make accommodations. It's not easy. It's not simply black and white in the ways that we wish it was. This is why it's called faith, that we need to be following the Spirit of God, discerning what he's speaking in every time and place. There will be some values that will have to trump other values at different times. And we need to be cautious that as we look at other people, other Christians, we don't simply point a finger and say, well, they shouldn't do it that way. I know better than them. Well, do you? Because what did Jesus say about pointing fingers? He said, take the plank out of your own eye before you look at the speck in someone else's. And then there's these words in Romans 14:10. So why do you condemn another believer? Why do you look down on another believer? Remember, we will all stand before the judgment seat of God. These verses come in the context of a conversation Paul is having with the people in Rome, where he's saying, some of you feel like it's okay to eat meat that was sacrificed to an idol. Some of you don't. Some of you feel okay drinking certain things, and some of you don't. Some of you want to worship on a certain day and some of you don't. Who's right? He says, well, the point isn't that either of you are right. The person is right who's convinced of what they should do and does it. They feel strongly that God has instructed them to act in a certain way and they do that. And there could be another Christian that feels very differently. And that can be a result of our background. It could be a result of an experience. Be the result of some situation we have in our lives. For example, Some people will say the question, is it wrong for a Christian to drink alcohol? Well, I'll ask you this, is it wrong for an alcoholic to drink alcohol? It's a better question. Because for some person, they may be able to handle that, and it would be fine. But for some people, that would be really wrong. It would cause a lot of problems in their lives. What is the right thing to do in any given situation? That is the work of the Spirit. We can't live apart from the Spirit. We have to be discerning. It's not always cut and dry in the way that we'd like it to be. And so we can't be judging other people who have landed in a different spot and yet are still faithfully trying to pursue God. We can't look because it's God's role to judge. The judgment seat is filled. It's not my position to condemn another believer because of the convictions they have. It's my responsibility to make sure that my life is lived in accordance with what I've heard God say to me. Now, these can be difficult things to grasp, but they're important. Let's go on. Justice is found in humility together. So it's not found in judging other people, in judging other believers. It is found in humility together. It is found by gathering together and say, I'm struggling with this area of life, or we see this need in our city. We see this need in a different part of the world. We see the inequity of this situation. What can we do? Justice is found by humbly gathering together, not judging, but humbly saying, I don't know, you don't know, let's figure it out together by the work of the Holy Spirit. That is where justice is found, when we do it together, discerning the voice of God. Now, I want to just give this caution. When I say that it's your job to discern for you, what the Spirit is saying to you, you need to listen to the voice of other Christians around you. You don't just get to be an island to say, no, that's not what God told me, la, 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 I don't want to hear it. I'm convinced that this is okay. That's not the right response. Real justice is found when we have humility and we listen to others together to discern the voice of God. This is one of the reasons why small groups are so important, because we hear from each other how we're reading and hearing the voice of the Spirit in Scriptures, how we hear it in the sermons, how we hear it in conversation. So justice is found in humility together. I'm going to take you to this passage, which is just so beautiful. It's one of my favorite passages, really, that tells the story of Jesus in a really compressed form. This is Philippians chapter 2, verses 4 to 7. It's part of a much longer section, which is absolutely incredible. It says, don't look out only for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. You must have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. Though he was God, listen, this is the part. Though he was God, he did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. Here we see how God works. That he has power and all truth. And what does he do with that? What does Jesus do with the power he has at his disposal as God? He doesn't cling to it. He doesn't use it for his own advantage. He gave up his divine privileges. He used his power in a humble way as a human being to die on a cross, to rescue us. That is the way of justice for a Christian. That we use whatever power and privilege, whatever voice we have, whatever resource is at our disposal, and instead of clinging to it, instead of demanding rights for ourselves and taking the comfortable path, we stand up in the face of injustice and say, that is not right, and we use whatever we have at our disposal to bring about justice, to make it right. The way of the Christian is the way of Jesus, who showed us that we don't cling to our power and privilege. We don't cling to our position. We have an open hand to reach out, to extend life and love to those who are in need. That is the way of justice. It's found by living in the power of the Spirit, taking that on humbly, by gathering together in community as a church to saying, what is it that we can do? How is he leading us? How can we pursue what he has called us each individually to do, but also together as a community of faith? How can we represent the life and kingdom of God here in this place? How is it that we can show the life of Jesus amongst us by using whatever resources are at our disposal for the sake of others? Even if that means we suffer. Even if that means our pain. That is the way of Jesus. That is the way of justice. This will not be easy. Whenever we pursue justice for another, it may come back as suffering for us. It will come at a cost for us. And yet we can't do any less. Justice isn't the icing on the cake. It's baked in. It's who God is. It's who we are as his followers. And we can do no less. And that's just it. Justice is found in the way of Jesus. Now, as we come to an end, I began by talking about some people here at Cornerstone who have pursued justice and as they've followed Jesus. And I want to show you the story of Yasha Bell. Yasha is attending at our Cornwall site. She's been here. She's been in Montague. She's been all over the place. She's got a wonderful heart for the Lord and for serving him. And she, through the work of Compassion International on a trip, she began convicted that she wanted to do more. And so she's going to share some of her story now. It's about 5 or 6 minutes. Direct your attention to the screen. You can watch this.